I know you're a baseball guy as well. I want to get your thoughts. Today, we got the four newcomers as far as the Baseball Hall of Fame is concerned. The first ever unanimous choice in Mariano Rivera being voted in, but also the late Roy Halladay, also designated hitter Edgar Martinez, and then starting pitcher Mike Mussina as well. Your thoughts on those four?
Well, I like the fact that all of them are in there. I detest the fact it took until Mariano Rivera to get a unanimous selection. I'm very happy that he was unanimously selected because I think he's deserving of that. I'm still trying to think about how those people, Ted Williams wasn't unanimous, Willie Mays wasn't unanimous.
Hank Aaron.
What was going on?
Yeah.
Yeah. That was just ludicrous, really, when you get right down to it.
Well, you had those stubborn old-timers that, just because when you looked at there was no unanimous ones before, then they felt like anybody new shouldn't be unanimous either. And so it was just their little grudge and turning in blank ballots.
Yeah, they were a little curmudgeonly, let's put it that way.
Yeah. The get-off-my-lawn guy. That's what we're talking about.
Pretty much. But I was glad to see that Edgar Martinez makes it in there. Why would we establish a position, albeit in just one of the major leagues, but all the minor leagues, designated hitter, and then refuse to honor someone for performing so well at that task? Now, in a way, Harold Baines, who I don't think is a Hall of Famer, but was recognized by the, what goes as the Veterans Committee, but I think that Edgar Martinez far surpassed what Harold Baines did. Harold Baines maybe is more, I think, famous for being a kid that was seen as a 9 or 10 year old by Bill Veeck in Maryland growing up, and he was so impressed by him, he made sure when he got the White Sox that they drafted and signed him. Then you think about what went on Roy Halladay. I mean, so okay, you don't need 300 wins to get in there. It's kind of ridiculous now when we've gone to 4 and 5 man rotations, and Lord knows what's going to happen in the future when we now have beginning rather than starting pitchers going through. Halladay was certainly a dominant pitcher for a 10-year span, and I think that is the true test of all of this. And Mike Mussina took 18 years to win 20 games, but here's a guy who I thought definitely a deserving in there. Now, there were some other deservings that I thought were omitted, and among them, I think, Larry Walker and the Crime Dog.
Is it, from my standpoint, everybody talks about whether it's a Mark McGwire or a Sammy Sosa and a Barry Bonds. I just look back who it hurt. And certainly a big one here in the Southeast that we, not only somebody on the field, but what he meant off the field. And Del Murphy just sticks out to me.
Yes.
And he was hurt by the video game numbers. And here was somebody that was growing each and every year as far as votes until all of a sudden they put out those inflated numbers year in and year out because they were using performance-enhancing drugs. And Del Murphy paid the price for it at the time.
Yeah, let's also point out something else. When they have limited the voters to just voting for 10. And that created a backlog which hurt that type of player also. So there are various machinations that we have had to live through, and I hope that later on they can be recognized.
All right, let's turn our attention to yesterday. Certainly just what the doctor ordered after the back-to-back losses at home to Winnipeg on Thursday and over the weekend to the Florida Panthers. A nice 4-1 win yesterday against Colorado. One more game. What will be? Obviously, you don't be focused on the break. First things first, take care of business against Vegas.
Yeah.
What would the break mean to the squad?
Well, maybe getting a couple of guys who are still in injured reserve much closer, if not in fact back, for when action does resume on February 1st in Florida against the Panthers. Maybe exact a little bit of revenge in that game, too. But you need sometimes to just shut it down for a bit and get your energies back, because I think fans can even say they notice the Predators lacking a little bit of energy in those two back-to-back home losses you alluded to there. And I think that's going to be the biggest positive you can take out of this. If you're playing really well, though, and the Predators are playing inconsistently right now, if you're playing really well, you don't want to have a break like this. You want to keep on playing, but I think this will benefit the Predators.
Pete Weber joining us again, the voice of the Nashville Predators. You know, here's the thing. You can understand if there was a lack of that, you know, the energy or whatever the case may be against Florida, the concern that, you know, Winnipeg is not just another regular season game. And I think that's where the fans get more concerned, because one of those two games we're talking about, one of them happened against the Jets.
Exactly. And you always think about head-to-head. So there are two games left with Winnipeg. Well, both of them will be up there in the land of the McKenzie brothers, the Great White North.
Where do you see this team right now? I mean, it's different. This team had to certainly tread a lot of water with all the injuries. Not back to 100% just yet, but still only 2 points behind Winnipeg as far as the Central Division is concerned. And Errol, all indications these two teams are going to see each other again in, as far as the playoffs, not unless there's a major surprise between now and then. You know, where the Predators stand at this point, when you look at how many games we've played, you know, we're 51 in, 31 to go, one more game before the All-Star break. You know, your thoughts about this team and the position they're in right now?
Well, I think they're in pretty good shape. They'll be in far better shape tomorrow night. They will have Ryan Johansson back in the lineup, coming back from his two-game suspension. No matter what anybody might have thought, whether it was deserved or not, it was handed down, and you have to live through that. And that will allow everybody else, and this is kind of going to be like what it was, Johnny, when he was traded for in January several years ago. His presence allows the other centers and the other forwards, really, because of the versatility on some of them, to play more where they were intended to play. Colton Sissons did a fine job, particularly yesterday afternoon, stepping in. And he did that as well when Ryan Johansson was knocked out due to injury in the playoffs a couple of years ago against the Anaheim Ducks and then on into the Stanley Cup Final. He does a great job there, but Ryan Johansson is eminently better, and the team suffered without him the last two games in terms of trying to win faceoffs. That's where they usually dominate. They did not in the previous two games, even yesterday's.
As far as when you look at the line combinations, whether you're talking what the Predators are trying to do when they're attacking an offense, but even from a defensive standpoint, you like it when PK and Roman Josi are on the ice together at the same time?
It's interesting for me to watch, and I don't know if I can say I like it or don't like it, but it's just so different because we haven't really seen that to any extent since PK first joined the team after the trade in the fall of 2016 for Shea Weber. That was the initial thought, was you just plug PK in where Shea had been. And then it worked out that it was maybe a little bit better with Ryan Ellis over there. So it's always a work in progress. We'll see how this works out. But I think PK, number one, is a lot more healthy than he was just a little while ago.
I mean, there's two ways of looking how to improve this team. You can either add to it before the trade deadline, or you can play with some of these combinations to see if that makes you a better squad. I mean, we see it in the other sports. We see it in football, where if your offensive line's not producing, maybe we take the left guard, move into right guard, or even bench him and take somebody off the bench and bring them into the situation. I mean, you know, there's two ways to do it. You can either add to the squad, or you can take what you have and shuffle it up a little bit.
Right, different utilization of those bodies. Now, sometimes that's necessitated by injury. Other times by what you're doing in terms of, do you have a good deal out there? And I think that there are so many teams that are still so close. I don't know that we have that many sellers right now out there for certain. You can take a look at the standings and ascertain probably five or six, but maybe not as many as there were, say, at this time a year ago. So that would make the price higher, and I think teams now are learning it's probably not all that wise, certainly not that prudent, to go for broke in terms of giving up prospects and draft picks.
Having a chance once again to visit with Pete Weber, voice of the Nashville Predators. You know, Vegas, the opponent tomorrow night, kind of reminds me of Winnipeg. You know, sluggish start to begin things, but look where they are right now. Winnipeg atop the Central, two ahead of Nashville points-wise. And here's Vegas now with 62 points on the year. They're 1 point behind San Jose in second place in the Pacific and only seven back of Calgary. But it's two teams got off to slow starts, but now it seems like they've put things together.
Yeah, and let's look at this record as well. The Predators and the Vegas Golden Knights are almost like my buddy Terry Crisp would say, when you regard them and try to define the differences between them, it's most like watching a spider doing push-ups on a mirror. Their records are virtually identical. And this is a team that maybe is having a little bit more difficulty on the road this year than they did last. But both of these clubs know that nothing is guaranteed them. And the Golden Knights have shown, I think, that if anything else, nothing else, last year what they accomplished was not a fluke.
And they're just like, you know, when you look at the like Calgary leading the Pacific, I mean, Vegas plays well at home. They're 16-5-3 at home. A big difference, you know, some cases, like we talked about the Predators last year, whether they were at Bridgestone Arena or on the road, they looked like the same team, home record,
yes.
Away record. Vegas, an entirely different team at home compared to on the road that you're alluding to. I mean, they're a 500 squad away from home. But home ice, they have a huge advantage.
Yeah, the only time they don't have an advantage, it seems, is the team that was in here the night before, and that was the Minnesota Wild. The Wild, in this brief history of the Vegas Golden Knights, are 4-0-1 against Vegas.
Go figure that one out.
They just seem to have their number.
What are you looking forward to most from the Predators to wrap things up before the All-Star break tomorrow night?
I'm looking forward to seeing the Jofa line reunited, seeing Ryan Johansson back there in the middle of Philip Forsberg and Victor Arvidsson. And boy, did Philip Forsberg throw a beautiful, almost 170-foot pass to Victor Arvidsson, which he turned into a wraparound goal yesterday, which really would stand up as the game winner of that 4-1 win. So I'm looking forward to seeing the three of them back together again just to whet our appetites for what comes up on February 1st, resuming play in South Florida, and the following night back home against the Dallas Stars. And it will be a night to honor Jordan Tutu at home that night.